All right, my friends, thanks for tuning into the podcast, where, as always, we'll discuss the professional literature and the evidence-based protocol as they relate to the effective treatment of clinically significant anxiety symptoms. I'm Chris Lines, licensed psychotherapist and OCD spectrum disorders treatment specialist, and this, well, this is OCD Straight Talk.
I think that you can kind of liken it to shades of colors, right? And that, you know, colors seem to fit within objective parameters. And we can all kind of agree that, you know, blue is blue and green is green and black is black and dark purple is dark purple. But one of the things that you begin to see when you take a really, really close look at these colors, and particularly the variation in colors, is that there can eventually be a color that looks both blue and green at the same time. And you might actually have one or two or three people say, well, that is, if I were pushed, I would say that one's blue, right? And somebody else might say, well, I actually think that's green. No, man, you're nuts. That's blue. No, fuck you. It's green. You know, this kind of thing. And it's important to be able to see that there's complexity, right, to the variations in colors. And maybe it's something of an innocuous example, but I think that's kind of how psychological diagnoses can be conceptualized. Like there's obvious overlap between a lot of the anxiety related disorders, whether we're talking about panic disorder or specific phobia or OCD or whatever generalized anxiety disorder or separation anxiety disorder. And then you get into like issues like something like trichotillomania and excoriation disorder and post-traumatic stress disorder. And from a bird's eye view, maybe we say, well, these are obvious objective categories that are easily distinguished between each other. And that's fine. But when you're in the room with an individual, and you're talking about a specific set of symptoms and the history of those symptoms and specifically how those symptoms present in the individual's life from day to day, well, it's not always that simple. I don't mean to say it gets super, super cloudy and unclear. No, that's going too far. That's not true. But there certainly can be meaningful and substantive overlap between these conditions. And sometimes you're going to have some individuals standing around saying, you know, fuck you, that's green. No way, it's blue, right? And that's a reality. And it is a reality. And sometimes that's okay, because the effective treatment for a lot of the anxiety-related disorders is fundamentally the same thing. So even if we're a little bit off, it turns out to be okay in the end, right? Sometimes that's okay. But in certain instances, you really do need to, well, I don't know, be right. It's important to be correct in your conceptualization of the reason for symptoms. And I'm not talking about all this like Freudian mumbo jumbo bullshit of like, well, let me, you know, analyze this person's childhood to death while she spends, you know, hundreds or thousands of dollars in fucking copays. And, you know, 3 years later, well, you know, we still haven't gotten, I don't know, anywhere. That's not what I'm talking about, but like this sort of concept of it's important to understand the why in the moment of the symptom presentation. What's causing this, for example, panic attack? What's making it happen? Right? Why, or let's say, what made it happen in this particular instance, right? From the day to day, what kinds of experiences are precipitating your panic attacks? What's going on for you that we might say is triggering the experience of panic? And it's a good question. It's an important question, not just sort of diagnostically, but it's an important question in terms of effective treatment. You know, because like when you're looking at the experience of panic attacks, like there's generally two common reasons that individuals experience a panic attack. And I don't mean to say, well, there aren't theoretically other explanations. Most certainly, I'm not saying that. I'm saying commonly, there's two reasons that individuals might experience a panic attack. The first of these reasons is physiologic, right? And maybe you say, well, what the hell do you mean physiologic? It's this idea that, you know, we experience panic attacks, and many of us have had such experiences before, and we understand sort of intuitively that, well, a panic attack is the sudden onset or surge of anxiety. That's foremost what a panic attack is. It's panic level anxiety. And very typically, it's reported as sudden, right? It seems to come out of nowhere at all. All of a sudden, I'm panicking, right? And for some individuals, we might say, I don't have any idea why, right? And the diagnostic criterion here would use the term unpredictable. It seems to be absolutely inexplicable, unpredictable. I was, you know, humming along, minding my business, doing life all 1 minute, and the next minute, I'm in a full-blown panic attack, right? And I don't know why. It was entirely unpredictable, right? And maybe some of the individuals listening to this podcast, oh, fuck yeah, dude, that's me, right? Fine. So that's pretty common for individuals who have panic attacks, right? And again, when I say physiologic, what I mean is this, that we'll experience a panic attack and there's certain sensations that seem to happen very typically or frequently with the experience of panic, right? And some of those might be something like increased heart rate. You notice your heart is racing while you're in a panic state. And most people can say, oh, yeah, that's been me. I definitely remember that, right? Or it might be, maybe some dizziness, right? I remember just being really, really dizzy. Maybe some individuals might say, well, I remember I was sweating, my palms were sweating, or maybe my forehead was really, really sweaty. Maybe I was hyperventilating and I just really couldn't breathe. I was just really, really super anxious, right? And so they come to associate these sensations so much with the experience of panic that these sensations themselves, notice, even when they're not anxious, they're just hanging out, right? They're not anxious. And in this sense, the panic attacks, remember, are unpredictable. They're just hanging out. And all of a sudden, well, they notice that they're a little bit sweaty, right? And maybe the room is hot, or maybe it's a little warm outside today, or whatever it is, right? Or maybe they notice that they feel a little dizzy, right? And maybe they're, whatever the medical reason, I mean, I don't know, man, but for whatever reason, or maybe they're starting to feel their heart. They notice their heart beat. And maybe that the thought comes to be, oh, my heart is racing, right? And so then they're experiencing their heart to race, or maybe they're breathing a little bit more quickly. Again, so whatever the sensation then has the power to itself trigger a panic response, right? And so in this sense, it's unpredictable. And so what we end up wanting to do with treatment in this particular instance is what's called interoceptive exposure therapy, right? Interoceptive exposure therapy is just exposure therapy that focuses on the experience of these sensations. So we're working to sort of to elicit and then to tolerate the experience of the sensations prolongedly and repeatedly, exposing ourselves to these sensations. And over time, what we find is those sensations themselves no longer really have the ability to trigger a panic attack, right? We've spent so much time with the sensations that they don't elicit the same level of anxiety anymore, right? Another reason that people can have panic attacks is an obsessional trigger, right? This isn't necessarily as unpredictable, right? Individuals who are having panic attacks relative to an obsessional experience are going to say, well, yeah, I mean, I know why I had the panic attack. Maybe I don't really want to talk to you about the thought that I was having, right? Maybe it's like sexually taboo, or maybe it's kind of like a harm OCD kind of thought. Well, what if I kill myself? Or what if I, you know, kill my spouse? Or what if I, you know, run somebody over with my car? Or, you know, whatever it is, these kinds of thoughts that can be hard to have and hard to experience and certainly hard to share with other individuals, right? But these kinds of thoughts can feel so upsetting to us that they have the power to elicit a panic attack, right? And so what we want to be able to do in these instances is what's called in vivo and imaginal exposures, right? And the idea, though, is rather than working to elicit sensations, we're working to elicit thoughts, right? We're working to confront situations that are likely to produce or, again, to trigger these unwanted anxiety-producing thoughts. And then here we are, we're engaging prolonged and repeated in vivo exposures or imaginal exposures. Fine. So why am I telling you this? Well, I'm telling you this because it matters the why. And it matters the why because the why then shapes the what in terms of what the therapeutic work is going to be. But this is where the whole thing turns interesting. Because whether we're talking about panic attacks associated with the experience of anxiety-producing sensations or panic attacks associated with the experience of anxiety-producing thoughts, we're still talking about exposure therapy, whether interoceptive exposure therapy or in vivo and imaginal exposure therapy, we're still dealing with prolonged and repetitive exposures. And you've heard me say you're not really doing exposure therapy if you're also doing compulsions. The question then becomes, well, what compulsions are you doing? Well, if you're experiencing anxiety-producing sensations, really what this is associated with what's known as panic disorder, right? Panic disorder is the idea wherein we're anxious about the next panic attack. We have strong or clinically significant what's called anticipatory anxiety. And the anticipatory anxiety is really relative not just to panic attacks, but the experience of the anxiety-producing sensations. So we engage the interoceptive exposure therapy. But here's what's important. Individuals with panic disorder tend to avoid situations or places or even people in which or around whom they've had panic attacks before. So in other words, they work to accommodate their anxiety so as hopefully not have another panic attack. Well, this is slightly different in the case of panic attacks that are associated with the experience of unwanted thoughts, say, for example, sexually taboo obsessions. Individuals in this particular camp will often seek reassurance or do research, or they may do some avoiding as well, or all kinds of other sorts of compulsions. But the point I'm meaning to make to you is in both cases, we're working to engage exposure therapy, and absolutely positively in both cases, we're working to identify and prevent compulsions. Well, that's it for another episode of OCD Straight Talk. Feel free to reach out with any questions you might have to chrislines04@gmail.com. If you found the podcast helpful, consider giving it a 5-star rating or subscribing to OCD Straight Talk for structured help with your anxiety or OCD symptoms.